trouble.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
Hello and welcome again to the Good Trash Genre Cast, where we, the UCO Film Society, somewhere buried deep in the bowels of Liberal Arts Building tonight, we are up in the Humanities Department. We invade all space wherever we can find. We are here to discuss the films you will not ever hear about in a film studies course.
Ever.
And to apply film theory and good analysis and some good old clean American fun on top of all of that. So that's what we're going to do tonight. And we're going to look at the movie Creepshow. But before we do that, we need to do some introductions. First, myself. My name is Dustin Sells. I am a 20th and 21st century studies graduate student here at UCO. To my right is this young lady right here. Can you introduce yourself, please, ma'am?
My name is Grecia Gramajo, and I'm a political science major.
And also, further to my right, introduce yourself, sir.
I am Arthur Gordon, and I'm also a graduate student here at UCO.
And to my left.
So weird that I'm on your left this week. I can't deal with it. I'm Dalton Stewart, and I am a senior sociology major here at the University of Central Oklahoma.
Great to have you guys all here tonight. We're recording on an off night because of reasons. And because of that, there'll be a week-long delay between the recording of this particular session and the actual broadcast thereof. So if something major happens in pop culture in the next 7 days, it's not because we're dumb or ignorant or not paying attention. Although all those things are true, that's not why we missed it. The reason why we missed it is because we don't travel through time. At least not yet, science.
One day.
We're looking
One day.
I'm waiting for the doctor.
So there's that. So without any further ado, let's move on and let's first of all begin with our synopsis. Can the voice of the theater please address us with the synopsis of the movie Creepshow?
Inspired by the EC comics of the 1950s, George A. Romero and Stephen King bring five tales of terror to the screen.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Voice of the Radio and Theater. Let's begin to my left. Dalton Stewart, what'd you think of the movie?
That's really all I can muster for this. You know, I didn't hate it. I liked some of the segments. I was really expecting to like this movie more. I'd never seen it before. This was my first exposure to it. George A. Romero directs five short films written by Stephen King. That sounds like a slice of fried gold on paper.
That's a cocktail of awesome.
Yeah, and this movie just kind of is meh. It was really just completely underwhelming.
Thank you for that single word summary.
Meh.
Meh. Is that a word? That's a phonic.
I believe it's an onomatopoeia. Yeah.
All right. So there is that. Arthur Gordon, what'd you think?
I've got to agree with Dalton here. Meh. It had some high points, low points, but I wasn't really hurt if I'd never seen it. And, you know, I expected it to be funnier, and I don't know.
Well, let's see if the tide of mediocrity continues. Gracia Gramajo, what did you think?
I think I am too emotionally attached to it, so it scared me, scared the living daylights out of me as a child, that I still haven't missed my father's birthday. So I think that's the reason I continue to love it. It's true. If I were to watch it now without having watched it as a child, I'd probably be like, really? This is the best those two can muster? But I don't know why. I don't know. But I liked it. It scared me when I was younger. And I mean, I still, since then, have only watched it with other people. So I don't know if it still scares me or if I'm alone. But I'm not going to try and find out.
There you go. Okay, well, thank you, Grace. My opinion of it was all right. I think I liked it. I think I am, because of my age perhaps, am able to distance myself from the inability of this particular film to age well. The special effects are
very poorly aged.
Definitely showing their age and the time period from whence it all came. So I think that might be part of you guys' reaction. You can answer that here in just a few minutes. But I saw it as an artifact of the time from whence it came, and in that way I thought, this is good. I enjoyed this. It was fun. I would watch it again. And so I may have a higher opinion than the rest of you guys, but that's okay. That's what we're here to do, is to discuss these things and talk about why they work, why they don't work, and whether or not they're worth watching in the future. So there are our initial reactions. Let's do a little bit of analysis. Let's just go in the order that we went just a moment ago. Mr. Dalton Stewart, tell us what you thought.
Well, you know, you were talking about aging, and maybe, you know, you can look at this and say, well, I remember this time. I've watched a lot of movies from this era, from the same creative team. I mean, Tom Savini is you know, special effects whiz worked on this movie. He's got a cameo on the Trashman at the end. I expect much better work from Tom. I mean, and especially George A. Romero, the godfather of zombies. This looks like junk, man. I mean, it's bad. It's really bad. The creature effects in this movie are terrible. They leave a lot to be desired, and I'm not talking...
You didn't love the AstroTurf growing out of Stephen King?
That was actually my favorite part. The AstroTurf on King, that was great. But the zombie dad and the first short Father's Day, the monster in the crate were both really junky. The corpse in the final short with the cockroaches emerging from it, all of these are just some really not very good special effects. I was severely disappointed, especially because I'm such a big fan of the work of the people that worked on this movie. Beyond that, I do want to talk about just, you know, my issues with special effects. I do want to talk about my issues with the film as a whole. It really didn't seem to know what it wanted to do. And this is something that's often very difficult in a comedy horror film. This one had a really hard time finding the balance. It was often far too silly. It just undercut the horror. Or vice versa, it just completely forgot about the humor and went for scares that were okay. Specifically, the lonesome death of... oh gosh, I can't remember the character's name.
Jordy Verrill.
The lonesome death of Jordy Verrill was hilarious and weird, but not particularly scary. Meanwhile, Father's Day tried to do the blend and failed on both counts. It wasn't scary at all. It wasn't funny at all. It was just... That's actually my least favorite.
You didn't think the Ed Harris awkward dance was hilarious?
I did love Ed Harris showing up. It took me a second to realize it was Ed Harris because he had hair. but I do love Ed Harris, and I thought him seeing him was there was great. But I just did not like that. Was actually my least favorite short. I don't know about how you guys feel. Interjections?
About the Father's Day one?
Yeah, the Father's Day one. I hated it.
Again, I still haven't missed my father's birthday. Like, my father's birthday since then.
I
missed the Misfits show because of it. Because I'm like, I can't go. It's my father's birthday. Misfits? No.
Father's Day is probably at the bottom of the list for me, and probably The Crate as well, I think. But yeah, I can agree with Father's Day being
just junk.
For me, it's The Crate at the lowest. It was scary, but it was still my least favorite just because of the whole, you know, his wife thing, and then he eats, I don't know.
That's actually something I like about The Crate, and I want to get into in a second. Dustin, what about you?
You know, the one I liked the least was the Lonely Death of...
really?
Yeah, it sure was. Stephen King and his Wile E. Coyote impersonation.
I like to think of him as doing a Don Knotts or an Ernest Goes to Camp.
I wasn't feeling that. I actually read in some trivia that was the directorial direction that Romero gave King was to pretend to be Wile E. Coyote about to fall off a cliff.
Well, I can see that.
And... Well, Stephen King takes direction quite well, as it turns out.
As it turns out.
But that was my least favorite. I really... The Crate was probably my favorite.
I like The Crate as well.
I enjoyed it a lot. I really liked the cockroach one, and I liked the wraparound, and I was fond enough of the Father's Day story. I mean,
I
all just...
so much. That was... If that one brings me down from it's okay to meh, I hate that one so much. I was really... When it started... And it opens with the weakest one. I was like, oh my God, do I have to sit through another hour and 45 minutes of this crap?
Okay, so we know kind of now what episodes we liked, what episodes we didn't like, and that's part of that whole nature of the anthology, which may relate to some of the analyses that we hear here in a few minutes. Let's begin and do some of that. Dalton, to my left, why don't you give me some analysis in this movie?
Well, there was one theme that kind of stood out to me, other than episode 2, is what I'm going to call it, The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill. Finally remembered that name. Apart from that, the overriding theme of all of these shorts is how awful rich people are. The overriding theme of this is people of means feel that they are above the law and can behave in any manner they choose. And it's about a supernatural comeuppance on them. And Father's Day, whether justified or not, we have this daughter murdering her father who murdered her lover. And he comes back to the grave to kill to kill the entire family. That's probably the one in which this morality tale works the least. The people that were acting in the most justified manner still reap a terrible reward. It is still a justice of sorts for people that thought they were above the law. Tide you over, especially. It starts out and you think this is going to be a morality tale about the nature of infidelity, when in reality it's a morality tale about the nature of revenge and behaving as though you can... take vengeance upon people as you see fit and not have any deserts come your way. And in The Crate, we see this actually get gotten away with in a lot of ways. The professor character is treated terribly by his wife, Billy, played by Adrienne Bardot.
Played well by Adrienne Bardot. Oh,
God, she's awful in this movie.
I hate her so much, which is intentional.
Intentional. A scream queen of the ages. And she treats him terribly. And she is murdered by her husband using some sort of Yeti as his murder tool. And this is the only time... and granted, these are not necessarily people of means, but they are intellectuals. Mm-hmm. They are the collegiate. They are academia. So... kind of part of that upper crust in some ways.
Do you think this in some way anticipates Day of the Dead that's coming just a little while later down the pike from Mr. Romero?
I think it's definitely possible. I'd have to revisit Day of the Dead, but yeah, a lot of that is dealing with the obviously, Dawn of the Dead is very heavily about the decadence of consumerism. Day of the Dead is partly, as I recall, being about the industries that hold this up, specifically the military-industrial complex. Mm-hmm. And I think that might be where he's heading. If there's one thing Romero is good at, it is about injecting social commentary into all of his films that he's ever worked on, at least the ones I've had exposure to. The Crate is the one where that morality tale is least clear, though. It's more of a straightforward, ghosty story, kind of. And that one is actually one that works really well for me, though, because it has this dual narrative of the one professor... discovering this monster and, you know, having a panic attack, essentially, about seeing all these murders, while we have the secondary professor dealing with his wife being a god-awful person, and then those two stories intersect. And then finally, we have They'll Creep Up on You, I believe is the name of the final segment,
yes,
which is really gross.
Fantastic.
And that is the clearest example of this rising up of the dirty... The poor and huddled masses to take over their bourgeoisie oppressor and bring them down. That's a gross one. It's also really... this is the one that I think tonally works best. Has the best mixture of dread and humor. I think this is probably the most successful. It's not my favorite, but I think it's the most successful of the shorts in the film. But to me, that was definitely the overarching theme of this film is you are not above the law just because you have money.
That's good stuff there. I appreciate that, Dalton. Arthur, tell me what you thought. Don't tell me. Tell the listeners what you thought.
I will do that, Dustin. I thought, you know, as Dalton said earlier, this movie just, it walked a line and it never crossed it well. It was either too silly, it tried to be too gruesome, it never found the right tone. And coming off of Clue last week, Hetch had a very almost perfect tone. Mm-hmm. I think it was hard to watch this one, where it struggled in finding its tone throughout the film. In certain segments, it did well, but overall, I don't know if it was there. Beyond that, I liked Stephen King's performance. I think he did really well. I think it was fun. It surprised me that this author actually did this well. I thought it was fun, you know?
It's definitely the silliest segment, and I think his performance plays up how silly that segment is.
And that one, and then Something to Tide You Over, I thought both were really well. To me, Something to Tide You Over is the best. It has a great pace, but I also think it's due to the people involved. Mm-hmm. Between Nilsson, between Danson, I think they have a great dynamic, and that one just flows very smoothly.
It's very scary. That one was the most dreadful to me, honestly. The most overbearing sense of, oh, God, this...
I mean, they all disturb me, but I'm a wuss like that. But yeah, that was one of the ones that scares me the most.
And I think it's interesting that that's one of the more successful ones, one that doesn't really try to be silly, apart from some really dark humor.
Couple things I just want to point about this. I've always kind of grown up with this being almost maybe the quintessential anthology horror movie. You know, this is one I've always kind of looked to as like, that's the anthology, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, kind of history of that or anything else. But I kind of got to researching it, and the horror anthology actually dates back to 1919. And some of the German filmmakers were kind of dealing with that.
Really?
And then we see that coming up. Fritz Lang had an anthology. A French director, Julien Duvivier. Federico Fellini has worked with him. Dario Argento. And then John Carpenter, Toby Hooper. You know, it just kind of, it's been there for a long time. And I didn't expect that for me. You know, that was the big surprise. Another thing I wanted to point out is, this is obviously an homage to those old comics. And Tales from the Crypt and the EC comics. And you see that... portrayed so well throughout the colors, the blues and the reds, and the transitions and the cell shading, and
You get the comic framing and everything throughout the editing. And I thought that really worked well. The editing and the sound mixing, I thought, worked very well. I picked up on something in the Jordy Verrill story. It stood out to me. He says, when he finds the meteor, "I wonder how much they'd pay for it up at the college." And I went back to the faculty when John Stewart's emphasizing, "We've got to get this out to the labs to see." You know, so that was a nice little recurring trait I've seen here. I also noticed that Something That Tied You Over is the least of the comic book movies, of the comic book feel throughout all the movies.
It has the least, yeah, like there's panel splashes.
A little at the beginning, maybe towards the end, but overall it's the tone of that, yeah. You know, visually is even different. Something Dalton kind of mentioned. Anthologies usually feature stories of people who have done something terrible. The not protagonist, I guess, but the main character is usually a bad guy. And by the end of the movie, you're usually going to get some kind of ironic twist of how he's going to deal with this. And another thing I want to point out, sometimes there's a character or an object that appears throughout each story to kind of a thread there that connects them. Here, it's actually the marble ashtray from Father's Day. It appears in each story somewhere. Finally, the last thing I want to mention, and I thought of Dalton when I caught this at the end, it's in the final of the wraparound, and the garbage men are talking, and they find the comic. And one of them says that they love horror comics, and that their kids love them, too. And I thought this was interesting, because and this is stereotyping, but for me, at this time, the garbage man is kind of a lower class, a lower financial, you know, kind of
socioeconomic background is the word we use.
Okay. And the father... And
in
the
Great
family.
Britain, it's just class.
Yeah. Here in the States, I think it's about a D4 working class.
We're a little more,
but over
in the sociology department, that's the word we throw.
I thought
it
was interesting to me that the father. I think this family's probably doing pretty well for themselves.
Yeah, they seem upper middle class, definitely.
I know, just because I'm a fan of Stephen King, and so I've read a lot of stuff. I know, you know, those comics, those EC comics, the parents did look down on them. They were regarded as trash, and usually...
Well, it's part of where this is super nerdy comic book stuff. I mean, the history of comics is part of where the Comics Authority came from, was the shocking tales of horror that the parents found so revolting, and that's where you get the intense censorship of the mid-50s coming into comics.
Those are the things I've noticed and want to point out.
Well, that is good stuff, Arthur. We appreciate hearing that. Gracia, tell me what you thought about the movie.
Well, what I was going to say was, earlier we decided that this was probably not the best work of all of them, but I think every horror director at one point just kind of, or anybody involved with horror at one point has this project where they just go crazy with all the horror, you know, like, all, you know, the typecast, I guess, like, of horror films. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Eli Roth had Cabin Fever. He just got all of the stuff that he liked about horror film out of the way, and then they do their own thing. Or, like, they always have little projects where they try to go over-the-top horror, and maybe that's what they were trying to do. Just all the stuff that wouldn't be taken seriously if they were to do it in a serious, like, piece of their work. But if they get together and just do a series of little stories like that, they could just get out of the way wanting to do all the stories that they wanted to do, which is why I kind of accept that it's probably not, like, you know, as good as all the other stuff they did. You know, the creep show and stuff like that, those, like, little morality tales that are just, like, you know, like, super ironic at the end. Like, the Demi Moore one, it's, like, the most ironic one ever, because...
Tales from the Crypt.
Tales from the Crypt. Yeah. Tales of the Crypt. I was thinking about creep shows. So I forgot the name. Tales of the Crypt. But yeah, that's, I don't know. I like it. That's what I had to say.
Well, great. Actually, I want to piggyback on the same idea. And what I really picked up from it was those ideas of a morality tale and how closely related horror as a genre is to fairy tales. And the use of humor in this film particularly ties very well to what we find in fairy tales. I mean, what kid doesn't giggle when you say, "And then the little bear said, this porridge is too hot, this porridge is too cold, this porridge is," and the kid chimes in, "just fine." And
picky little girl breaking into people's house and getting all upset that things aren't the way she wants them.
And then she gets eaten for it. The way I tell it to my children, because
it's the way you should tell it.
Because my kids have complexes. They don't have issues. They've got subscriptions.
They will have a horrifying phobia of bears.
Which is good, because bears eat people.
No, they do. Bears do eat people. Children, be afraid of bears. That's what we can tell you about this
these
movie.
These are the things I'm trying to teach. Now, what happens in all of these films, I'm treating them as short individual films, and I think that's kind of how they're meant to be treated, is they are stories about transgression. You have broken the rule. You have somehow transgressed the moral fiber of society in some way. And I would go ahead and go further to say that Stephen King transgresses in that he sees the meteor and he doesn't think about the good of humanity and society and of science. He thinks, golly geez, how much money could I get for this? Crazy.
And he does. That's a good point, because I got really hung up on this. The socioeconomic, the punishing of the well-to-do. I didn't even think about that. He was selfish in his attempt to exploit natural resources, something I hadn't considered.
Well,
so
that makes sense with Father's Day, too, because even though it was justified, he killed us well, it didn't give her any permission for her to go back and kill him.
That's why we have courts.
Very true.
Yeah. We don't commit patricide. We call the cops. That's what should happen in this circumstance. So there is always that. There's Leslie Nielsen exacting revenge in a similar kind of way. Mm-hmm. Again, adultery. Not good. However, you don't kill people for this. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is zombies from the depths of the ocean come back to get you if you commit that sort of vengeance. If you isolate yourself from all of society and you only prop yourself up with your own greed, you end up being eaten by cockroaches. That's what you deserve.
But our professor gets this is where your theory falls apart. Our professor gets away with murdering his wife.
But is he 100% justified is the question. I mean, he has taken her crap for however long.
Father's Day is 100% justified in murdering her father. She still gets her comeuppance.
I want to suggest that perhaps there is still comeuppance there, because the Beast does get out at the end. And I've got a feeling he's mad at the end. And this is
good
a
point.
Time and a period and place. You know, one of the reasons why the EC comic books were so controversial is that they didn't subscribe to the motion picture code, which required that all monsters be killed in the end, and also required that all evildoers be punished for their misdeeds in the end. And what we have at the ends of these films is that kind of dissonant ending at every point. And so the monster lives, and I've got a feeling the good doctor may have a something go bump in the night again later in his life. And so there's
definitely probably a valid leap in logic there.
But it's a leap. But
for the most part, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the morality tale shines through.
And this is the episode where our listeners are going to walk away being better people.
We should
not like
so.
When we encourage them to do drugs on the faculty.
No, none of that. You will not cheat. You will not exact revenge.
You will not isolate yourself
from society. Don't eat porridge, kids. That's what we're trying to teach you this week. So that's kind of the lesson learned. And I think that morality tale, fairy tale tie, and we're really talking about a taxonomy or a genetic ancestry of the horror film from the fairy tale, with a very practical sociological purpose, which is to instruct the young on not doing things that get themselves in trouble, to not be the kind of people that die sad and alone. And that's really what it's about.
Well, you're right, because now we all know that to survive a horror film, you're not supposed to go out and do drugs and be a nasty jock, or, you know, God forbid, try and multiply before you're married. So stuff like that. So we do learn.
Absolutely. And again, the context, the frame around story is about a child who's listening to these stories. These stories are for kids. They are for kids, except for they're now for adult kids, because there's a gore content, there's a language thing, and we want to protect little young ears, I'm sure. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
I don't. Get them exposed early. I turned out all right.
So we come now to the point of the story, at the point of the podcast, where we decide, should this go on the shelf or on the trash? Mr. Dalton, what do you think?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a good trash genre cast first for me. 5 episodes in. Trash it. Sorry, George Romero. I love you. It's going in the trash.
Arthur, what do you think?
I've got to agree 100% with Dalton. Trash.
Grace?
I'm going to keep it, but I have a plan behind it. I'm going to go ahead and hide it, like, somewhere in my bedroom when I have kids.
So your dad doesn't find it?
No. Well, yeah. But I'm going to let my, like, because, you know, at one point, kids will always go around their parents' bedroom and sneak around, and I'm going to hide it from them. And then when they watch it, they're going to get what they deserve for looking around my room. So I'm going to keep it. To be able to raise my kids, right?
Wow. Well, you are definitely following in the footsteps unintended by the film, I think. I'm going to say go ahead and put it on the shelf. And part of the reason why is because I'm aware that there is a George Romero DVD commentary track on this film. And I think that's worth hearing.
That actually automatically makes me want to not throw it away. I'm still throwing it away, but I am curious to hear that commentary.
And I would put it on the shelf exclusively for Romero.
Really?
And I read it somewhere. The internet said so, so it must be true.
That's right.
All right, gang. Well, now that we've done that, let's talk a little bit about anthologies because they are, of themselves, fun things. And so we're just going to discuss our favorite anthology story, perhaps, and favorite anthology selection. Then we're going to expand the medium away from film. We can talk about books, short stories. We can talk about comic books. We can talk about television series. Whatever it is that floats your proverbial boat. And Mr. Dalton Stewart, your boat is the first to float.
As I mentioned earlier, the progeny of this film are much more successful than this. The one I was specifically thinking of when I said that is the film Trick or Treat. From about 2008, I believe. It's got a huge cast. Dylan Baker, Anna Paquin, just to name a few. Brian Cox. This film's got a great cast. It's very funny, very terrifying. I think it expertly blends both comedy and horror. The segments flow together very well. And also has comic book segues and editing, you know, panels. So it's definitely, you can see the influence on Creepshow on this film. But I do want to segue into some straight-up comic book anthology series. One specifically that comes to mind is a series not a lot of people have exposure to called 100 Bullets. Are any of you familiar with the series? As the series went on, it did start to have a more overarching anthology. But the general pitch of the comic is a stranger in a suit approaches you with a briefcase. He tells you in the briefcase is definitive proof that this person whose photograph is in the case, ruined your life. This is the person that has been responsible for all the misery that you've ever experienced. And in that case, with that proof and that photograph, is an unregistered handgun and 100 rounds of untraceable ammunition. And that is the setup for the story. As this comic book series goes on, the mythology gets a little bit overly complex. There's some Illuminati-type things going on. But, it's a series I got about halfway into before I gave up on it, and I do really enjoy it. I plan to revisit it eventually, but it's a very interesting anthology of we visit these different people and see how they deal with this ultimate power being handed to them. It's really an interesting comic book series. So those are just a few of my picks for really interesting anthologies.
That sounds interesting. I think I may end up picking up 100 Bullets.
I've got the first 6 or 7 volumes, man. I'll kick them one to you.
Arthur Gordon. Do tell me, what is your favorite anthology episode, perhaps, or at least series? Tell me what you're thinking.
As far as movies go, I really do enjoy Trick or Treat. I thought that was a blast. But for me, growing up, I was more into reading, so I had a lot of the books. I remember the Scholastic Book Fair would come to school, and I'd go try to find a ghost story compilation.
Absolutely.
And so
every single time. And my grandma always said no.
One of my favorite books that I picked up was I can't remember what it's called, but it's got ghost tales, like 50 ghost tales from around the world.
Ooh.
And so it was pretty fun. But at those book fairs, I also got hooked on Goosebumps.
Goosebumps
is near and dear to my childhood.
That's everybody's guilty.
Everybody
guilty
born
pleasure
in the last 30 years, yeah, probably.
See, I'm too old for Goosebumps. I read the straight R.L. Stein books, but go ahead.
Ooh.
And then also from my childhood, it was Tales from the Crypt, the live action, the HBO series.
Oh.
I thought it was a blast.
Horrifying.
And then, as I got older, The Simpsons, every year The Treehouse of Horror.
The Treehouse of Horror.
One of the greatest, you know, anthologies, the parodies, the puns, and the satire.
Great stuff.
And particularly, it's Treehouse of Horror 5. It's the episode where they do The Shining, not The Shining, because they don't want to get sued. Time and Punishment and Nightmare Cafeteria. This, to me, is more of a true anthology because you have a character who shows up in each of the segments and meets the same fate in each of the segments, and I think it's a blast the way they tie them all three together with that little thread. And then as far as books go, in the last few years, Stephen King's Skeleton Crew stands out.
Mm-hmm.
It includes The Mist, which is made into a movie by Frank Darabont. And it also has The Monkey, The Raft, and The Word Processor of the Gods. And these are all very good little short stories.
Well, thank you, Arthur Gordon. Grace Ingermaho, tell us about an anthology you enjoy.
You're going to make fun of me, but I like Tales from the Hood.
I will not make fun of you.
Okay, really?
I will not hate.
I have no idea what that is.
Have you drinking any Haterade?
I don't know what it is. Please tell me and the listener.
Just think it's really cheesy. They try to make like these scary stories like all gangster and try to make them all like, you know, really ghetto and like.
So it's like Leprechaun in the Hood, but with Creepshow.
But I like it just
sounds
because
fun.
I like it just because it's going for a target audience that horror films don't normally go for, like other than like, you know, Leprechaun. Let's not talk about Leprechaun. It's embarrassing.
We will never discuss that film ever again on this podcast.
I would have to say Tales from the Hood, and then of course, you know, those little 20-something ghost stories and like stuff like that. But. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I like anthologies as much as the next person. I gotta say, gotta go TV series. I really enjoyed Tales from the Crypt. Mm-hmm. This particular episode starring Joe Pesci that stands out in my mind, where Joe Pesci falls in love with this set of twins, and he wants both of them, so he pretends that he is a twin himself, and comes to a very
hilarity
nasty
ensues.
End. At the end of that because of a telltale sunburn. And so that's just one of my favorite episodes in any sort of anthology series of all time. My favorite anthology series is part horror, part fantasy. It's a collection of short stories by a guy called Neil Gaiman.
My man!
And it is not Smoke and Mirrors, which is the much lauded set, but it's the later set called Fragile Things. And I absolutely love that series. It is sprinkled throughout with bits of poetry. And there is a poem in there on the day the world ended. It's fantastic. And there's also just a little short story about hell and what it might look like. And time is circular here. And if you read that, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Neil Gaiman is definitely a modern Renaissance man. The dude is brilliant and has written in literally every medium you can write in. I love him.
Well, thank you, everyone, for your anthology recommendations. Listeners out there, tell us about your favorite anthology. Tell us about your favorite anthology episode. Tell us why we didn't get it right when it came to Creepshow. How it's fantastic. How it's terrible. How our ranking of the episodes is completely upside down and topsy-turvy. And we would love to hear your feedback on the Twitter or also on the blog. And we'll be looking forward to that. Maybe we'll talk about that here in a little bit more. But first of all, before we conclude and we start talking about our feedback from last week, let's talk about what we always talk about. Every week, what's got us fired up in pop culture? Mr. Dalton Stewart, are you fired up this week?
I'm very fired up this week, actually. The next time we, by the time this podcast is posted, my birthday will be up. It will be up about the same time. I say that to say this. There are three films. A few weeks ago, we had a huge docket of wide releases. We have another one. This week we have Sinister, Argo, and Seven Psychopaths, all hitting theaters on October the 12th. All of those films will be released, and I'm going to try to squeeze all three of them in.
I need more money and
because
hours.
It's the weekend of my birth. I will be seeing all those films eventually. But I'm really excited for all of them, particularly. Actually, I can't even single out one. I'm Sinister, the new horror film starring Ethan Hawke. Argo, Ben Affleck's third feature film that he's directing and starring in, and Seven Psychopaths. The return of the screen by playwright Martin McDonagh. A few years ago, he did the film In Bruges, which some people enjoyed. I liked quite a bit. So, those are some films I'm looking forward to that are coming out very soonly.
Excellent recommendations, Dalton. Arthur Gordon, what are you fired up about?
This past weekend, I saw Taken 2 and Pitch Perfect. Taken 2 lost the energy of the first movie. Still some good direction, but overall,
so
man.
Dalton called it right.
Yeah,
don't
fair.
Tell him.
I won't.
What?
So
I was right.
Pitch Perfect was fun. Some good music. Some comedy. It was just a fun little movie to laugh at. Also, I found out that it is rumored that Ms. Marvel, Carol Danvers, could show up in The Avengers 2.
I heard that.
And it is rumored that either Emily Blunt or the Luther co-star Ruth Wilson could be donning the Marvel mask. And so that could be exciting to look forward to.
Awesome.
Tomorrow, October 9th, Prometheus hits DVD and Blu-ray, but so does Steven Spielberg's E.T. the Extraterrestrial finally makes its way to Blu-ray. And next week, right after this airs, Moonrise Kingdom will be hitting DVD. So some great movies to be picking up in the next few days.
Gracia, tell us what's got you fired up this week in pop culture.
I watched End of Watch, and it was amazing. I really liked it. Yeah, I really liked it. I cried my eyes out at the end.
Don't say anymore.
I'm not going to say anything else. I just, but I'm really easy. I mean, I cried doing Avengers, so take that with a grain of salt. But it was amazing. I really liked the way they shot. The way they shot it works for, like, the whole premise of the movie. And I there were times when I was watching it, and I really like how it kind of looked like. If you watch it, you'll understand what I'm talking about. How sometimes they shoot it as if they were looking at tattoos. Just like it kind of works with the whole Latino gangster thing going on in the background of the film. But I also watched Looper, and Looper is as good as everybody else is saying it is.
I was right again. Twofer. I was right again. Taken 2 was terrible. Looper was fantastic. I called it.
All right, well, what's got me fired up this week in pop culture has got me fired up in that negative kind of way, that somewhat ranty kind of way.
Nothing and brings people together like mutual hatred.
Like mutual hatred, little debate, little argument, and this is really kind of more of a pop cultural sort of thing. And what it is about talking about movies with any sort of depth and how when those conversations come up, people begin to say, but aren't you just ruining the movies? Don't you just take all the fun out of it? And their eyes begin to glaze over. Here's the thing about things. Let me tell you about my thing about things. The thing about things is if you like things, you want to know more things about the thing in question. And therefore, you like talking about the West Coast offense, and you like talking about the seams of the defense if NFL happens to be your thing. Everybody tracking with me so far?
I'm with you.
I forgot how many times you've said thing.
Well, crap ton of prepositions. Keep going, my man. That's and not a preposition.
I just want to say that movies are one of those things, and it increases your enjoyment of the thing by knowing more things about said thing. And in those conversations, if you don't know the things the person with whom you're talking knows, you learn new things, and that is fun. If you're not interested in going that deep, per se, in football or in movies, you listen politely, then you change the subject to things that you both care more about. And that's all right. And I wish people would just do those things.
You mad, bro? Because you're turning red.
What? I gotta know, Dustin, what set you off on this?
Just some sundry conversations I've had, and I had another one, and the blood pressure got a little high.
It's funny you mention this, because I recently had a similar instance. The opposite end of the spectrum, though, this insistence on, you know, very critical film theory, this highbrow snobbery that exists in the world of film criticism, dogging films like The Avengers, which has come up several times in the last few weeks, and one of the biggest films of the year. Obviously, it's going to go up on the film podcast. Dogging such films, and to me, I think they're both problems on different sides of the spectrum. There is an insistence on you're ruining films by talking about them, and that's just silly. I'm totally with you.
Totally agree, and that's my rant. I'm just a little fired up about that this week.
I liked it.
So, folks out there, tell us what you thought about the things we had to say.
The things we had to say about things.
The things about things. The things that others said about other things today, because we are discussers of things here at the Good Trash Genre
Cast.
Just for
fun and like funsies, please, somebody can please count how many times he said things and, you know, leave us an answer. I want to know.
The first listener to count the number of mentions of things by Dustin gets something. We'll get back with you on what. The first person hit us with how many times he said things in that rant, you'll get something.
I'll check.
There will
be
Good Trash Genre Cast swag. We will find something, and you, sir or ma'am,
I will look through Pinterest to see what I can make for you guys.
All right. Well, there you go. That's what's got us all fired up. Let's do a little listener feedback. We've got a little action going on the Facebook. Mr. Arthur Gordon, why don't you share that with us?
Yeah, we got a couple of comments. The first comes from Nathan W., and the first two comments are both in regards to Clue last week. Nathan says, if you remove Tim Curry from Clue and choose another actor, I would then classify the film as unwatchable. He doesn't carry the film. He is the film.
Strong
Clue
statement.
Did not have a spot
indeed
in my collection.
I agree.
Thank you, Nathan.
But you love that film. You think that
yeah,
film.
Yeah, but why I said that one of the.
Okay, true.
Tim makes it for me.
Our next comment comes from Caleb M. He says, the best joke in the entire movie has to be the singing telegram. I watched the movie a few months back, and I was laughing hysterically for at least 5 minutes.
And then finally, I've got another comment, and this is from Stefan L. He says, and this is a little more recent, he says, I feel like Taken 2 took my money.
Aww.
Well, Stefan L., I haven't seen it, but it probably did.
You should have listened to the podcast.
You need to find Liam Neeson and demand your money back.
I will find you.
And I will get a refund.
Oh, my.
Is that were those all from our newly minted
Facebook?
Facebook. Oh, fantastic.
Did you know you could follow the Good Trash Genre Cast at facebook.com/goodtrash?
That's interesting, Dustin. You know where else you can follow the Good Trash Genre Cast?
Tell me where.
You can get us on the Twitter. That's right.
At.
I call it the Twitter like an old man. We are at good_trash on Twitter.
You can also follow us at Tumblr at www.goodtrashgenrecast.tumblr.com.
And of course, we are available on iTunes. That's how legit we are, kids. Please rate and review and subscribe.
And finally, we can all be followed on the Twitter, except for Gracia, who is only has a
Le Tumblr
for herself at Gretzia, which is GRETZ_Cia. CIA. That's how you say Cia. You can also follow Dalton Stewart at Dalton Stewart, STUART. You can follow Arthur Gordon at RNDTBL Review. You can follow me, Dustin Sells, at Dustin_Sells, SELLS. And we would love to hear your comments, your feedback, what you think. Follow us because we just need the affirmation. Thanks so much, gang, for listening. Next week, we're going to look at a little movie called Hellraiser. It's the first foray into cinema by a man called Clive Barker, who made some waves, let's just say. So let's talk about that next time. Go ahead and give it a look, and we'll see you next time.